This is All About Wine on Blog Talk Radio, the talk show dedicated to the wine industry since 2009, originating from Florida Estates Winery in Land O'Lakes, Florida, featuring winemaker, cellar master, vineyardist, and tasting expert, Ron.
Basically, what we're trying to do on this program is just trying to educate people and trying to make wine less confusing and more friendly.
Vice President and General Manager of Florida Estates Winery, from coast to coast and around the world.
You know, we really have had some neat people on the program. I love that.
Call our guest line at any time during the live show at area code 646-727-3235, and let's talk about wine. Again, the phone number to call is 646-727-3235. And now, All About Wine is on. Here's Ron.
Thank you. Oh, he did make it back.
Thank you.
All I heard was, oh, I got to go. And that was it. And I'd go, uh-oh. What do you think?
I had to go get my book. I didn't have my book. I always have my little book that I take notes on and refer to and all that. And I didn't have it. I had to run get it. You're right. It's National Beer Drinking Day. And we got a guest today that took that to a new stage. He's got beer and wine combined. So we're going to be talking beer and wine combined. Vino brew.
I thought maybe you were trying to get something to drink or something. I go, oh, this is going to, okay. So he left. He just, poof. I've never heard you part that quick. I mean,
yeah,
wow.
I wanted to get it before the program started, so I wouldn't run away during that. So, but okay. National Beer Day.
Well, let me hop out and I'll be right back. Go grab our guest.
Grab our guest here. Kevin Luther is our guest tonight. One of our guests, actually, a couple of them, it looks like. We're going to get Kevin Luther on. He is the winemaker at Wise Villa Winery. It's in California, foothills of California. We're always talking about different real estate up in the foothills. We actually have a guest from there tonight. And we're going to talk to him. We're also going to bring on Michael, who is the brewmaster for the beer. And they did a wine-beer combo. So we're going to talk about that. So since today's Drink a Beer Day, and this is all about wine, we're going to give a little combo here and have wine and beer. All right. So Mike is getting a hold of him out there, and we'll have him back on in a couple of minutes here. And let's see. I don't want to leave the screen too much because that gives me my information there of what's going on in the background. So hope everyone has recovered. If you're in the Florida area from the hurricane that went through, our thoughts are out to Puerto Rico. That flattened that down there. That was tragic what's going on down there. Some of the islands, it just devastated. There's nothing left. I don't know if there's winery in Puerto Rico. There's a couple of wineries in Puerto Rico that I've been told about. There's also a whole bunch, as we know, rum places in Puerto Rico. And the rum business is big. I don't know what happened to that down there. I have not heard any word on it. That's something I guess maybe I should go back and check on. That would be interesting if there's going to be any repercussions on the rum business because of that. So I'll have to do some follow-up. In fact, let me make myself a note right now. Rum business in Puerto Rico. What's going on with that? I'm not sure. Just taking the time to get Kevin on the program here. I don't know what the word is. He will. He'll get him on. Mike's good at that. Rum business in Puerto Rico? I'll have to follow up and see if there's anything on the websites or pull up with Ron Rico and Bacardi and all those and see if they have anything on their websites and see what's going on with that. That's interesting. As go the rum business down there, so would go the wine business, I would suppose. I don't know of any particular wineries that are in Puerto Rico, so I can't check on those, but I can check on the rum business. So we'll see what I'll check on this next week, and I'll let you know what has been happening down there if you are a rum fan or if you're just interested in what's going on with it. We'll let you know next week. Wow. It's not like they're... A lot of times I can see where they disconnect and get back on, but he's just on hold now. So, oh, well, we'll see what's going on. Let me click over to the winery here real fast. And Vinbrew. Vinbrew is the first in Placer County collaboration with Gold House Brewing to produce a wine beer blend called Vino Brew. So they were talking about that. Gold House Brewing is also just, I guess, down the street. They're both on the same road there, both on Wise Road in Lincoln, California. And so, let's see if that's updated. I always have to check. Oh, somebody's in the green room, it looks like. And we got Mike back.
Yeah.
All right.
It was good.
Took me longer than I thought there, and so I thought maybe there's a problem. So, all right, let's bring Kevin on here. Hello, Kevin. Welcome to All About Wine.
Well, thank you for bringing me onto the show.
Yeah, appreciate it. Appreciate y'all doing it so quickly too. I really do. Really am looking forward to hearing about that. I think Mike is going to go try to bring on Michael right now, and see if we can get him to join us on the program. So the winery, while we're waiting for Michael to get on the program, tell us a little bit about the winery, where you're located, and I know you're in the middle of harvest. You mentioned that.
Mm-hmm.
But tell us about the winery a little bit.
Yeah, absolutely. So we're Wiseville Winery, and we're, by California standards, we're still considered small, but statewide, we're pretty decent sized. We do about 200 tons of fruit a year. It's about almost 15,000 cases. And a huge variety of wines. We make about 20 different wines. So although we're decent sized, it's pretty small, hands-on, handcrafted production. So we mostly do it in anywhere from 2-barrel lots up to about 8-barrel lots, most of our wines. And we just make a lot of them. So it's we have 20 acres of vineyards we manage directly, and then we source some fruit from the local areas in the foothills here in Northern California, as well as a little bit out of Lodi and Clarksburg, but a lot of estate-grown fruit as well. And we produce the wines entirely here on our facility on site. And it's myself and my right-hand man, Steven Erickson, and our crew producing all that from grape all the way to bottle here on estate. And hands-on, really careful winemaking techniques of sorting the grapes over and over again to make sure that the purest grapes make it in the wine. And all sorts of crazy techniques. I could go on for hours and hours. Like you were saying, we're in the middle of harvest, so my head's deep in the winemaking technique and really focusing on making sure our wine turns out with just amazing quality. So got a lot of techniques that go into it, but a medium-sized, handcrafted winery is the gist of it.
When did you open? What year?
So we've been around for, our first vintage was 2009.
The
first vintage we released, and we brought that out in 2010, opened our tasting room. But the vineyards were at that point already about 5 years old. So at this point, I believe the vineyards are 12 years old. And we've been making wine, selling out of our tasting room here. We have a nice tasting room on site where people can come and try through our massive selection of 20 wines. And we also, just about 4 years ago, added a bistro on site. So we have wine and food pairings for lunch and dinners and to do all sorts of special events, weddings, blending parties where customers can learn about the art of blending different barrels together to make the right flavor profile. And then we do some other cool events like a traditional barefoot grape stomp.
And speaking of blending, we have Michael from Gold House Brewery here. Let's invite him on. Hello, Michael.
Hey, guys. How are you?
Doing well.
Thank you. How are you?
Then great. Kevin said that you and he collaborated on a blending of beer and wine, Vino Brew. That just fascinates me. I'm going to let you two tell us about it.
Yeah, hey there, Michael. How are you doing?
How'd it come about?
Hey, Kevin, how are you? It was an idea that Kevin and tossed around for a little while, and in the beginning, we talked about where this can work and go, and we've done kind of the evolution of it's gone a little bit farther than we originally talked, and it's been pretty exciting. I mean, we started out with blending, finished products together, and tabletop bench testing, and getting the right blend between a beer and a wine, and then it kind of evolved into co-fermenting wine and beer together. And so, it's been quite the evolution, quite the ride.
Yeah, and for me, I know it's something I've been wanting to do for a while to kind of bring the worlds of wine and brewing together. I'm a great lover of winemaking, obviously, being a winemaker and having followed this as my passion. But I think most of my life I've been just about as passionate about my love of beer, but just never got into the making of it like Michael. But, as a winemaker, it's my honor-bound duty to drink as much good beer as possible. So it's always on my mind.
It takes a lot of good beer to make good wine, too.
That's it, man.
Yeah,
I wonder, do you drink wine when you're making beer just to balance the scales?
I do my fair share, yeah.
All right, good. And I'd always thought, I love how craft brewing, like the stuff Michael does over at Goat House Brewing, is just so innovative, thinking of, what new flavors can we bring in? I mean, you guys did some stuff with local peppers and local fruits and stuff, right?
Yeah, everything that we do here, we're a small farmhouse nano brewery out here in Lincoln, California, and so we grow all our own hops, we grow all our own kind of adjuncts, all our own fruit, all our own, we have honeybees out here, and so we're super seasonal, so whatever we can source here on the farm or source, source within like a mile of us are the types of beers that we make. And so, the menu changes probably every 2 to 3 weeks. There might be one or two varieties up there that stick around. But for the most part, they rotate around depending on what I have access to. And then, bounces off the board too. So in the summer, we'll have peppers. In the, late fall, early winter, we'll have more citrus comes in. So that's when you see more of our, the citrus beers come out. And when the citrus comes, we make a beer. And when it goes, we're done until the next season. So it's definitely an ongoing rotation.
Well,
yeah.
Based on that then, does that mean that your Vino Brews are going to be changing? I notice you have four of them now, but are you going to keep making those four, or is it going to rotate?
I'm not quite sure. Right now we've experimented with a couple of blends. We did a couple of co-fermentations, which has been super well received here at the brewery and at the winery as well. And so where it goes, I'm not quite sure.
Yeah, and that's one of the things that we did last vintage was Michael brewed up a big batch of Saison, and we took that Saison beer wort, not yet fermented, and blended that in the pre-fermentation stage with various different grapes, whether it was grape juice, the whole grape must, so the skins, the seeds, and the juice, or just the skins, or just the yeast lees post-fermentation. We took some different variables and mixed it with the Saison and co-fermented those together with, 5 or 10 different grape varieties. I mean, you should have seen the place. It was 40 buckets fermenting of these trials.
Yeah.
And when we fermented it all and it was, still beer post-fermentation, we then stabilized it, settled it, and then and bottled them all bottle-conditioned beer style, or in the world of wine, we'd say, method champenoise style. We put them into champagne bottles, crown capped them and let them re-ferment in bottle with the priming sugars.
Wow.
And we had, 30 different types. So although we've only released 4 to the public, we've got a lot of stuff in the back pocket that we could bring out if this thing progresses for different ideas.
Right.
The trials
were a lot of fun, going through and, seeing what the yeast did to the fermentation, to see how much skin, how much juice, how much wort, how much, there's a blend and all kinds of different variations.
Exactly.
As well, so. Yeah.
And I think that's so much at the heart of this, both, a lot of stuff that Goat House is doing and a lot of stuff we're doing here at Wise Villa, that, you know, we're notorious in the wine industry, especially around this region, for doing a lot of experimental stuff and a lot of things that no one else has ever done before. We are the first people in this region to produce sparkling wine from our estate grapes, the first people to make a hard apple cider, and we did some barrel Chardonnay barrel and lees fermented apple cider as well. And, you know, we're doing all these off-the-wall experimental things, and so is Michael over there at Goat House, you know, with Kathy. And I think what we have in common and why it was such a good collaboration was we're both trying to think outside the box, and we're trying to think of new things and, you know, almost create new categories of alcohol because, you know, we got to keep consumers interested. We got to keep throwing new ideas, new flavors out at them. And for me, it's just I get bored with the same old thing, you know. You can't drink Bud Light and you know, basic Chardonnay every day. You know, you want some variety in your life, especially in the world of craft beer and, you know, craft winemaking.
Yeah, and it's, you know, to see people's faces when they come in, like, you know, and they're asking about the Vino Brew or what, you know, which one we have on tap right now, and see their faces kind of like, they kind of cringe, but then they kind of like look at you with curiosity, and you describe, like, it's not a wine. It's not a beer. It's actually a co-fermentation, you know, especially the latest, you know, carnations. It's a co-fermentation. And so, you know, there's really no one out there, like, doing this. And so, like, what Kevin was saying, like, you know, with Wise Villa and us here at Goat House, we're always trying to not necessarily push the envelope, but, like, change people's minds on what a beer is or what a wine is. And so it's pretty fascinating to see, you know, the reaction from customers.
Well,
yeah,
you have
absolutely.
And tell us about the four that you have now.
Right now we're pouring a variety called Tetta Rosa, and it's we took the Sangiovese grapes and the Sangiovese skins co-fermented with the saison wort, and that's the one that we have on tap here at the brewery currently.
Yeah, and we're hoping to soon produce another round of the Dark Side of the Eclipse, which is the one that it's a blend of the Goat House's Dark Side stout beer, and then we got our Eclipse port style wine. So we decided Dark Side of the Eclipse works pretty well for that one as a name, and and that's the one that actually a permutation of that was recently on how it's made in Canada and the U.S. and soon in other countries on nationwide international television for a permutation of that. We did a collaboration with a local coffee place, Rogers Family Coffee, which is actually a pretty large coffee place, but they're locally located in the owner, a friend of ours as well. But it's a coffee, stout, and a port co-blend that we're calling morning, noon, and night. And you got your coffee, you got your beer, you got your wine, so you got, you know, all 24 hours covered, basically. You can just drink that 3 meals a day.
Yeah, that was definitely it just aired on how it's made, and that one was definitely well received, and I see another iteration coming, especially here in the winter months or as they approach it. But people have been asking about the Dark Side of the Eclipse for sure.
Absolutely. Yeah, and you know it's interesting, you know, and I don't know if you guys have heard of Dogfish Head. They're a fairly large brewery that's notorious for their experimentation.
Yeah, they're all over. Yeah.
So they've done some really cool experimentation, sort of in this same realm, coming from the brewing side, where they've, you know, tried to put some beers in red wine barrels, and I think they even did something with some red grapes, some Syrah skins. And it's interesting that they've drew their inspiration from a similar inspiration for me, where there's a researcher. He's a alcohol archaeologist, which not many people have a cooler sounding job than brewmaster or winemaker, but alcohol archaeologist is right up there. I think that and Indiana Jones are about the coolest things you can be.
You're right.
So I think he's an astronaut as a side job, you know. But so anyway, yeah, he does research on the first alcohols made by mankind. And when you look back at, you know, just the really early Sumerian civilizations and the first beers, the first wines, well, we like to think of them as beer and wine, you know, but when they actually look at these, you know, usually ceramic clay vessels that they unearth in these early human sites, and, you know, before we even learned how to bake bread, we were making beer, basically, you know. And before we had permanent settlements, we were making wine. So it's amazing how long alcohol has been around. But when they really look at that archaeology, what they find is that they didn't just brew, you know, grains into beer or grapes into wine. pretty much all of these vessels appeared to have some mixture thereof. So it would be grains, honey, and fruit all thrown into a vessel together and fermented.
So yeah, basically,
we were just fermenting whatever we could turn into alcohol and seeing what happened. So
basically, what you're telling me is that you're not the first to do this. You're in a long line of people who've been doing stuff like this.
Yeah, exactly. It's really the most ancient form of alcohol. You know, long before we had grocery ales that defined beer as being a separate beverage from wine, you know, early humans didn't see a drastic difference. If it could turn into alcohol and it tasted good, then that was perfect.
And right, even if it didn't taste good, they probably drank it anyway. So, you know, it's...
Yeah, exactly. But, so it gives some inspiration to, like, well, you know, we like to define things and we like to organize things as humans. You know, it's our nature. But when you really boil down to it, the most important thing is to make something delicious that's going to be delicious not only the person making it, but the person drinking it. And, you know, if it doesn't fit into some neat, tidy little category that, you know, supermarket managers create, you know, well, yeah, that's not really the most important thing. The important thing is to make something delicious and innovative.
Michael,
so that's what we're trying to do. We're really reviving the earliest alcohols.
Now, Michael, how long have you had Gold House Brewing Company? How long have you been open?
Gold House has been around. We opened September of 2013, so we just celebrated our four-year anniversary a couple weeks ago.
Very good. Very good. All right.
Congratulations.
Yeah, so not too long, but long enough to, you know, definitely get our feet wet, and so.
Long enough to make Vina Brew. How is Vina
long
Brew?
Long enough to make Vina Brew, yeah.
How is Vina Brew accepted by people when you come in? I mean, are they willing to try it, or are they sort of like, eh?
Well, I mean, I can't speak for Kevin at the winery, but here at the brewery, I mean, we definitely get some quizzical looks, you know, up front. We explained to them, you know, kind of walked them through the process of where it originated from, how we came about. You might try a little sample, and then they're just, like, blown away. Usually it's just like, oh, my God, like, this is awesome. It's not a wine. It's not a beer. It's, like, a super unique beverage. And so it's been received really, really well here.
And I'd say this more or less the same thing. I think the biggest challenge is describing it to people. Because once they taste it, and if they taste it with an open mind, they pretty universally are blown away by it. And I think the hardest thing is that people, because it's not a simple category, you know, it's hard for people to wrap their head around. You know, it's, what do I even think of this as? You know, they can't place their place in their mind. But, I think for me, the way that, at least for wine drinkers, it kind of makes the most sense, because it really doesn't taste anything, you know, in a traditional sense. It doesn't taste anything like wine. I mean, I think the closest analogy would be a sparkling wine, because it's fully carbonated in the way that a beer would be carbonated.
All the ones you made are carbonated then.
Yes, so they're all totally
carbonated
to the beer levels.
Sure.
Yeah, and they're typically served at beer temperatures as well. Although we find that as they warm up in the glass, that you start to notice more of the wine vinous qualities a little bit more as it warms up and loses some of the CO2. You know, that starts to come out more. Whereas at first, what you get is most of the beer. But because of that CO2 level and the temperature, I think it drinks more like a very rich beer. You know, maybe more of the, you know, in the realm of the Belgian, you know, the darker ones, like the one where you have the stout and the port, to me, drinks, well, kind of in the stout realm, but almost like, you know, a Belgian double or something is probably the closest.
Like a dark Belgian or some sort of.
Yeah, exactly. And then the fruitier ones where we've done, like, Saison with Muscat or Saison with Sangiovese, to me, are somewhere in the realm of, like, a sour or a creek or, you know, a ghost or a goza or something, you know, something in that realm.
Mm-hmm.
So it's as much a marketing problem as anything, because it's such a successfully delicious beverage. It's more like helping people understand the beverage.
Yeah, it's definitely an education experience for people too, to explain to them like where does this come from? How did we even get here? Why am I drinking a co-fermented wine and a beer? And like what even? You know, what were you guys thinking at the time?
Yeah, and I think what is helping it is that you're seeing that not only, you know, places as large as Dogfish Head, and, you know, apparently there's a major revival of this style in Italy, of all places. Apparently there's, like, it's just booming. There's, like, 30 different breweries in Italy. I just learned this from an intern we had come over last year because he heard about us making it, and he came over and he said, you know, in Italy, it's taking off. Yeah, Francesco. Yeah, Francesco in Venezia. He's working over there now again. But we've apparently it's reviving in Italy and around Europe in general, and then we're seeing it really boom in the U.S. in certain regions, mostly in the brewing industry, not really from the wine side. It's more breweries doing it for the most part. We're one of the only wineries directly involved. But as that's starting to spread, and then locally as well, Kathy, Michael's wife, was just telling me that two local breweries have recently released Vino Brews. So it's starting to take off locally as well.
It's not down here in Florida. I mean, we're in Florida. There is no Vino Brew around here anywhere.
Well, just wait a year or two. You guys will catch up.
Yeah, it'll get there.
What size bottles are those sold in?
So far, we've been doing them out of keg and selling them in either growlers or flip-top 750 mils.
Oh, really?
Like the size of a wine bottle. And it's been a really popular sell that way. People really like that. Plus, they can bring the bottle back and get another round if they really like it. So it's nice and sustainable as well.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I was picturing for some reason, a wine bottle more so than anything. But I suppose since you described it as more of a beer-leaning type drink, then the growlers would make sense.
Yeah, and we've been there's been some discussion of down the road here as we build this following, and as it spreads and we continue to get more demand of doing a limited production release of particularly the one that's on how it's made, that we were going to do in champagne bottles and wax the tops and everything and have a really nice high end presentation for those one for a limited release for the limited production those. And have those be bottled condition and therefore have a little extra character. Maybe even age them like a wine a little bit. But that's been in the works, but haven't yet released that yet.
Uh-huh. And when that does happen, maybe a bottle can make its way down to Florida.
I would love to see. It really, really would. I mean, that would be great. Yeah. Without tasting it, I'm one of your customers that would go, "Oh, really?"
we're gonna have to work on some distribution for it. We recently got an inquiry from the Liquor Control Board of Canada, asking us if we'd be interested in shipping some of it up to Canada because we were aired on how it's made up there, and they've had some inquiries as to if it's available in Canada.
Oh, wow!
Yeah, we've ever since the airing of that episode on how it's made, we've gotten inquiries from pretty much all over the U.S. about, where can I get this? How can I get this? It's been, super popular. And it's just like, at this point, we're super limited. You got to come to us at this point.
What is, and I know here in Florida, a beer and wine license is the same license. Is it the same there?
Not here in the state of California. There's a
it is.
There's a separate license for a wine grower, and there's a separate license for either a small or a large beer manufacturer.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay. Well, here it's one. It's a license of beer and wine. Basically, it's the same license, and so was there any problems with the state getting it as a combined product?
Well, we manufacture pretty much everything here at the brewery, and we can use adjuncts and grapes as an adjunct. So we're not technically making wine here at the brewery. We're making a this new category called Vino Brew. It wasn't a violation of any weird laws or anything.
Yeah, from a regulatory standpoint, it's just viewed as a beer with. With adjuncts, as Michael says, as the official terminology and everything. So, it's viewed primarily as a beer with wine, essentially, utilized in it from a regulatory standpoint. So any state that would allow beer in or any shipping laws pertaining to beer would fully apply in this case.
I see. You never know how states are going to look at that stuff.
Yeah, it's so complex. Ever since Prohibition, state alcohol laws have been pretty confusing.
Complex. They make it. I think they make it confusing on purpose.
Yeah. I think so. Yeah, and they don't. Yeah, yeah. Well, we won't get.
that's a whole can of worms. Absolutely.
Yeah, it is. Mike, do you have any questions for Michael or Kevin?
Well, you already answered the one, so it's not sold outside of California yet. So you're not shipping. There's no distribution yet on it. Okay. So that was one of them. Also, how does the I don't know how to put this, the shelf life of the Vino Brew compared to wine on its own or beer on its own? Is it different, about the same, or what? What does it lean towards?
I mean, from a beer perspective, it's about the same shelf life as a beer, as long as it's kept in a sealed container. Right now, like Kevin said, we serve it draft only, so it's we put it into kegs. So I couldn't speak of the shelf life like in a bottle or a can at this point, but I imagine it would have the same stable shelf life as like a beer.
Yeah, and I mean from the things that make a wine age well are a variety of things, but of course the acidity, the tannins, and the alcohol, all as well as the cleanliness of the general winemaking procedure are all very important. Mm-hmm. And both of us have very high standards of cleanliness, and our acidity in our wine is quite crisp. And well, the most important thing in the Vino Brew, being the mix of the beer and wine, is probably the alcohol in just making sure that it will age gracefully. And between wine, which is usually about 14% alcohol, the Michael's beers, particularly the ones we blended with, have usually been in the 7% range. So I mean, the balance is that these Vino Brews are 9 or 10% alcohol. So when you get a 750 mil of this, it packs a punch, first of all. definitely with that much alcohol.
Yeah, you may want to
it would age longer than the average beer.
Yeah.
But yeah. Yeah, but like Michael said, because it's in keg and because it's such limited production, it sells out before we would get the chance to find out if it ages. Most people drink it pretty fast.
I guess with all the inquiries you're having, you may need to prepare to kind of expand on that.
Absolutely. Put some away and see how it ages, and start following some up with this demand.
So, Kevin says, when Ron and I were talking, that on Kevin's side, they're in the harvest process, right? That's what you're doing now, I guess, or.
Yeah, absolutely. We're bringing fruit in from our vineyards turn it into wine, the whole process. I hear you guys are winemakers yourself, so I guess you know a little bit about that.
Yeah, we
runs away. I just
we've got I've got a winery down here, and we've got some local fruit and stuff. But we're pretty much done with our harvest down here. Everything's in tanks now, so I'm not worrying about it too much. So it's small.
Yeah,
we've
got our last. We're through about almost three quarters of our harvest, but we got the last little bit of it coming in, and still some stuff fermenting in tank. It's sort of the last little rush of fruit coming in, mostly Cabernet Sauvignon and Cabernet Franc, Petit Verdot, some of the late ripening varieties.
So when are the hops harvested and processed? Is that at a different time?
We're at the very tail end of our harvest as well. We started harvesting this year probably early. Let's say May was the first varietal started coming in, which is really early. And then we just are starting to pull the vines now. So from May to late September it's a pretty long harvest for us. So, but we're at the tail end of it now.
Oh, very good. So are you growing your own hops, or are you sourcing them from somewhere in California?
We grow our own hops. I mean, for those of us who don't know about outside here at Goat House Brewing, we're a small farmhouse brewery, and so we grow all our own hops. We have about an acre and a quarter, acre and a half of 20 different varieties out there. So we, throughout the harvest season, we'll make a variety of fresh hops. Right now we have four fresh hop beers on tap, and then the rest of the hops will dry and then vacuum seal and use it throughout the rest of the year. When they go dormant. And so right now we're at the tail end of harvest of the hops, and then we'll let the plants go dormant and basically put them to bed over the winter, and then come spring they'll pop up again, and the process will start right over again.
Fantastic. Hey, interesting. Are you both looking at doing the Vino Brew forever, or as it stands now, it's going to be an ongoing thing, new blends, new everything?
Is it a lifelong marriage? I don't know.
it's really pretty up in the air. We're still really feeling it out. It's at this stage still in the experimental round. And, the massive amount of publicity we've gotten for it, to be fair, took us off guard, because it was still very much in the early stages of development as we were doing some trial batches and small production, 100 gallon at a time. you know, just doing a round of kegs and pouring it in our tasting rooms. And, you know, suddenly we were on a couple different local television shows and local news. And then we were on How It's Made, international, nationwide television. And really, it's still such a growing thing and really developing a local cult following that the way I envision it is that it has this incredible potential to develop largely a cult following. Yeah, I don't just because of the fact that I think it's so hard for people to process what exactly it is defined as. I think that it's more likely destined to be a cult beverage, you know, a niche on the market shelf. And I think that if we can develop a group of people who are passionate believers in innovation and really just tasty, definitive beverages, then that kind of cult following is more what we're looking for than trying to develop this into any sort of a large-scale production or anything. So I think continuing to put out quirky new releases and keeping our fans really interested is the core of what I'd like to continue doing with this.
Yeah, I'd probably, you know, echo what Kevin just said. But, yeah, I mean, we love coming out with new, you know, Kevin and I, and, you know, we'll get together and, you know, come out with some new flavor profiles. You know, again, it's going to be pretty. I mean, at this point in time, it's going to be small, very small release. I mean, we're a pretty small nanobrewery, but the potential of it, I think, is huge. And but in the meantime, we'll definitely, you know, keep coming out with some different blends, different varieties, and, you know, keeping people interested in it for sure.
Yeah, and that's kind of the irony of this whole thing is, both of us have been so successful with our main product line, so to speak. You know, for Michael Brewing and for us winemaking, both of us have seen something in the range of just short of 50% production and sales growth every year for the last 5 years.
Wow.
And it's that kind of growth is hard to keep up with.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
It's one of those good problems to have, but it's been a wild ride the last 5 years. And we're just down the street from each other. I mean, he's 3 minutes away from us on a country road. So we're really neighbors here, but seeing each other grow and growing side by side has been a pretty cool process. But it's kept us so busy that this side project, you know, this thing, while it has so much potential, has really been kind of like a side passion project that we don't really have time for, but we're making time for, you know. So
right.
If you hear any hesitation in our voices, that's largely it. It's like, yeah, it could grow.
Yeah.
Like sleep.
who came up with Vino Brute? Where'd that come from?
That was a brainstorming session.
Yeah, we kind of sat around and you know, people were throwing out different ideas of like what this concoction can be, what it should be called. You know, again, we're trying to define a category that didn't exist, so it's like, I don't know, what do we call it? So,
yeah,
Vino
like wine
kind of came out of those
sparkling
sessions,
beer, or sparkling.
Yeah.
Wine, beer, you know, brew wine, and I think someone said vino lager. We're like, well, but it's not a lager,
yeah.
So that wouldn't work. And then we're like, well,
yeah.
Vino brew. We're like, oh, vino brew. Yeah, sounds good.
Kind of
it
encapsulates both the wine side and the brewing side. And so yeah, we thought it was fitting.
Vino brew. Good name though. Good name. Mike, anything else? Ask the two.
No, this is very interesting. I've got all my my little questions taken care of. That was great.
If anyone out there is interested in the one that we're still pouring now, we're down to the very, very last dregs of it. So we're here in Lincoln, California, Goat House Brewing. Come on out. Testa Rosa is still on tap.
And
absolutely.
We'll
Well, if you come visit them, we're just down the road, so you can get a two-for-one and try your wine, try your beer, try your vino brew. And like I was mentioning, we've also got the cider, including some wine barrel and wine lees fermented and aged cider, which is our newest innovation that sort of falls into the same realm. So you may see expansion into that realm as well as we continue to always search for new ways to innovate, brave new worlds.
Yeah.
Well, that what you're basically saying is more ways to keep yourself more busy than you need to be. So that's really
yeah, exactly.
But
it's
busy, but
it's
fun. It's fun busy. It's fun busy.
It is fun. Michael and Kevin, both of you, give me all the information about your businesses, Goat House Brewing House and Wiseville Winery. emails, address, phone numbers, hours, all sorts of stuff. So everyone out there, if they do want to visit, has the information.
Okay. I guess I'll start. So we're at Goat House Brewing. We're here in Lincoln, California, which is just in the Sierra foothills here in California. We are currently open Thursdays and Fridays from 2 to 6, and then on Saturday and Sunday from 11 to 5. And so you can come out and visit, and we have animals out here. We always have a fresh seasonal beer on tap, and Vina brews rotate in and out. And so, yeah, come on out and see us here at Goat House Brewing.
What's your,
and then when you're,
Facebook or web address?
Oh, sorry. Yeah, we webpage is Goat House Brewing, www.goathousebrewing. You can also find us on Facebook, I believe it's just Goat House Brewing, and then also on Instagram. And then our phone number here is 916-740-9100.
Very good.
Yeah, and then
Kevin,
after you've worked up a nice appetite chasing goats and drinking beer over at their place, and you can come on over to our place. And like I say, we're just down the street. If you've had too much to drink, you could walk to us probably. And we're at 4200 Wise Road. We're open Wednesday to Sunday for generally lunch and dinner. And you can check out our hours and details. We do tours and tastings, wine and food pairing. We have a full-service bistro on site. So you got all sorts of events as well, weekly events, live music on Friday nights with beautiful sunset over the vineyard. So we're at 4200 Wise Road, Lincoln, California, 95648. And our website is www.wisevillawinery.com. Our phone number is 916-543-0323. And if you have any questions, you can also email us at info@wisevillawinery.com. And, yeah, come on out and check us out. Visit us. We got the winemakers here making wine. We have our tasting room, the bistro, events, vineyard, all sorts of good stuff. So,
what do you serve at the bistro?
See some of your folks. Oh, we serve a good range of stuff. It's largely, in the evenings, we have a little bit more dinner type items, but mostly we focus on tapas styled items. So you can have four or five items and taste them with wine pairings that go really nicely with them. So it's all very wine focused and European inspired with, classic California fusion, where we take a lot of European traditional items, bruschetta and, traditional meatballs. We'll have some nice steak and taking that and pairing them perfectly with the wines that we've got, this massive selection of, we make, like I said earlier, 20 different wines, because I like to torture myself with ridiculous variety of wines to make and the vino brews and cider. So, but it makes for a really diverse and interesting wine and food pairing set of options.
And one other thing before I let you both go, the fires out west, the heat out west, have either one of you been affected by it?
Not here at the brewery. We get some smoke every now and then. I'm from the bigger fires up north, but not us, like, directly,
Yeah, and in the wine industry, there's definitely, during the fire seasons, fears of what they call it, smoke taint, that heavy fires can certainly impart a smoke flavor. And it's not the kind of smoky, pleasant flavor you get from some oak barrel aging, but it's more of like it's a fault. But we don't see that in our region. Luckily, we're far enough away from pretty much all of the major forest fires that it's never been an issue, even in major drought years. But, this year we had enough rain in the winter and spring that it kept things pretty moist around here, and we didn't really have issues with it.
Yep.
And the heat hasn't been a problem?
The heat's always a problem, but it's starting to cool down a little bit here, so it's nice. I mean, as far as the hops are concerned, some of the tertiary and secondary settings got a little crispy out there with, in those 100-degree plus days, but overall, it's starting to cool down, and I think we're all enjoying a little less heat.
Yeah, and for us on the wine side, the grapes, really, like I mentioned, with the really wet winter and spring and a little bit of cool spring that we got, we early in the season, we were about 3 or 4 weeks behind our normal ripening schedule. And there was, it was positive in a way, because it meant the ripening was slower, the vines were very healthy. But then, especially with the cool spring, the cooler temperatures make the berry size, the grape size, smaller, which typically results in a higher fruit intensity. So that was a very positive thing. But there was some fear that it was going to be so cool and so far behind that, we'd have trouble ripening the grapes. But what was great about that was, you know, we got this heat wave, which can be a bad thing in some years, but by and large, what it really did for the grapes was it caught them up. So as it stands, we're about a week or two behind our normal schedule, which is fine by me, actually. It's made for a nice even ripening, and all the fruit is ripened in time. You know, there's some fears as the fall rains start coming in on the forecast, and you've still got 25% of your grapes hanging out there, and you go, oh no, are they going to get rained on? You know, what disease pressures may we have? And you guys have more issues with that usually on the East Coast grape growing than we do here West Coast. But if we have a late season, we can still run into that problem. And but luckily with that heat wave, it caught us up enough that that's not a problem this year.
Yeah. Well, I was curious about that. Well, Michael, Kevin, thank you both so very much for joining us on such short notice tonight. It was fascinating, interesting, and I am looking forward to trying a vino brew. Somehow, some way, I need to get some and try it.
Well, thank
you.
We'll
have to get you a bottle from here. We'll get you some of that special edition. We'll bottle up before long.
I'll look forward to that. I really will. Then I'll tell everybody, you got to go to California and try this stuff. It's great.
Nice. We'll set up some vino brew tours. Well, thank you, Ron, Mike. I really appreciate you guys
thank
being
you.
On the show.
Appreciate it.
Oh,
thank
awesome.
You again,
thank
Kevin,
you.
Michael, yeah. and have yourself a
thank
great evening.
You.
All right.
Thanks,
good
guys.
Luck
you
in
too.
This. Yeah, thank you.
Bye.
Bye. All right.
Okay. I think I'm still on. Yeah, we're still on. Okay.
Yeah, you're still
just
there.
The,
you hit the right ones.
Sometimes I wonder. I got to I'm trying to update the description because this literally was I did the show information, I don't know, quite a few hours ago today, and I
just
put the standard thing, you know, now I'm trying to update
an hour
the,
before the show too. That was just
that was quick.
You know, boom, and they were both willing to come on and all that. So that's
yeah,
great.
So
vino brew. I really would like to try that. That just sounds fascinating.
Yeah. I'll update this, and where I can update the title information. I got that already. With what else?
I've got their website. Y'all check this out there. Listen, wisevillawinery.com. WISEVILLA. Wise Villa Winery. Where is it? Their wines. He was talking about all the wines he makes. Kevin was mentioning that. And as they do, I mean, oh my gosh, you pop on their site and there's like a bunch of wines there. Let's see, white wines. Here we go. And it's not doing anything for me. It's just rolling it around. But there's a whole bunch of different ones. Red wines, rosé wines, sparkling wines. Just a whole bunch of stuff. Oh, there it is. I didn't screw it down. They can ship to Florida, though. So that's...
Who can?
Hey. Yeah.
Who can ship to...
Wise Villa Winery can ship to Florida. This says Wise Villa Winery ships to these states. California, Arizona, Nevada, Oregon, Washington, Idaho, Missouri, Arkansas, Kansas. Wow. Kansas is very strict. Montana, Washington, D.C., Florida, Georgia, North Carolina, Rhode Island, and Texas. That's the same thing. They've got an Abarino, a Sauvignon Blanc, a Torontos. Voynier, Midnight Delight, which is a blend of Chardonnay and Muscat. That would be interesting. Also, they list their awards for each one of these. Pinot Gris, Surlis Chardonnay. That was the 2015. Also, the 2014 available. 2015 regular style Chardonnay. Midnight Delight, which is Chardonnay Muscat blend, and another California style Chardonnay in 2015 Trentos, and those are their white wines. Jeez, they do have a lot of wine, but some of these are different years though, so that could make a difference there. And they also have 2016 Bouquet of Roses, which is a rosé blend of Syrah, Zinfandel, and Muscat. Pinot Noir Rosé, 2016 and 2015 available. 2015 Syrah Rosé. Now, oops, that's sold out. And so is the 2015 Pinot Noir Rosé. So those are sold out. And then in red wines, they have, in red wines, they have a 2014 Zinfandel, 2013 Zinfandel, 2012 Zinfandel, 2015 Wisdom of Wise. Wow. It's our flagship blend of Cabernet Sauvignon, Merlot, Malbec, Cabernet Franc, and a bit of Petit Verdot. They had 2014 Syrah, 2013 Syrah, 2012 Syrah, 2014 Malbec, 2014 Cabernet Sauvignon, 13 Cabernet Sauvignon, 12 Cabernet Sauvignon, 11 Cabernet Sauvignon, and Wine Club member exclusive for the 2014 Trigo Nacional, 2014 Petit Syrah, 2013 Petit Syrah, 2015 Pinot Noir, 14 Sangiovese, which is sold out. And the rest of them are sold out. So I won't even go through the list there. But boy, they got a stack of that too. And they don't stop there. He also, Kevin also makes some sparkling wines and ports and sparkling wines, which is 2015 Blanc de Blanc sparkling white, non-vintage Blanc de Noir, a non-vintage Eclipse port style wine. Since you can't call it port, a port style wine, and that's it. So, you know, there's their stack of wines. He makes a lot of wines, geez. Plus, in conjunction with the Vino Brews there, so he is quite busy on those things. Oh, but it was fun. It's interesting stuff that they're doing there, and they're, you know, they're playing a lot. It sounds like just having fun and playing. Mm. And people are picking
they show
up.
I've been watching that, how it's made show, because it's interesting how they, I don't know, just a lot of the stuff that they show is like everything's automated, and I don't know who comes up with this stuff, but I didn't realize the reach that show has. They said it airs in 45 languages and 222 countries.
Does it really?
I didn't realize it was. I didn't realize it was that big. I mean, I'm sitting there watching it going, oh, great. You know, and I always wondered why, you know, they show a lot of it is from different countries and things that we're using. I'm like, oh, that came from there. I didn't realize this was made there, you know. And then I'm thinking, they never show, like, American stuff, you know. And it's all. But then I'm thinking, now I'm seeing this. I go, well, it's made in, it shows in 200 and over 200 countries, you know. That
yeah.
We're not the only ones making stuff, you know.
There you go.
Got to narrow it up. Kind of narrow to think that, you know, I mean, I know there's a lot of stuff made overseas, but I kept wondering why the show was, you know, a lot of it's made, a lot of it's in Canada, a lot of it's in Europe and everything. And I'm thinking, wow, we don't make a lot of stuff here. And then, you know, this comes up and then I look at their website and I didn't realize it was that big of a show. It's on Discovery Channel and, you know, it shows a lot of cool things, how it's made. Well, that's what it's called. But I never realized the reach of that show. I can't imagine being on that. Like they said, you know, now they have inquiries about from everywhere coming in. You know, it's like, be prepared, you know, because once it gets out there.
That is fascinating. I didn't realize, you know, that put a little bit more perspective in the fact they said, we were on that show and now we're getting inquiries from everywhere. And I just said, yeah, okay, Canada, U.S.
Yeah.
No.
It reminds me of that, reminds me of that commercial. I forgot if it was for Amazon or something, where they put this product on a website and it just started clicking and clicking. They're all looking at the monitor going, oh my God, we're selling thousands of these now. We have one box, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I remember that. That's just true. Oh no, look at
there
those.
It goes. Yeah. And they're just sitting around the monitor going, oh, we need to get busy. So, yeah, that's amazing. Gosh, this is, I didn't realize it was that big of a reach, but pretty cool.
Quite a coup for them to be able to get featured on that, too.
Absolutely.
That's something.
Yeah, definitely. That's fantastic. And we had them here. Wow, this is, there you go. Our last show of September.
Last show of
September.
Okay. Speaking of last show of September, I got pass on something here. Ennery River Winery. Since I get the email, I always like to pass on what's coming up for them. And they do have a packed format for the month of October. Pack the Porch lineup. They always do this on weekends. October the 1st, they have Bluegrass Remedy featuring Henry Brooks. October the 8th, Alex Davis. The 22nd is Dawn Larson. And October 29th is Russell Satterfield. They're going to have music all through the month. And the Pack the Porch is from 2:30 to 5:30 on Saturdays. And so something to mark your calendars if you are in the Newberry, South Carolina area. Then check them out on that also. And as always, it seems like I'm getting emails from let's see, what's the name? Oops, I lost him here. The local one, no. I got a blank on the name. That's a bad name. I know their name.
Not Camas Prairie or anything, because I got something from Camas Prairie.
Oh, did you?
On an event they have. Yeah, I forgot what. I'm looking through it now. I've got 1,800 emails in this folder. Yeah, I forgot how long ago it was.
What is their name? That's terrible. I get this email from them, and I want to mention it, and I keep. Well, I can't find it right now. I've got a bunch of them here also. So, but there's all over the place. There's events coming up, especially in the spring or in the fall here. Harvest events and cooling off in some areas, doing change of leaves. Check out your wineries up in the northeast, the change of leaves up there. Wineries have all sorts of different events because of that. And as you work your way south, Blue Ridge area is gorgeous, beautiful wineries there. So we're moving into that time of year. So keep an eye out. You can always go on websites and check it out, or go to catchwine.com, catchwine.com. And it lists wineries for all the states in the country, or all lists the wineries in each state in the country. So that's a good way to check it too. So it's a good time of year to visit some of the wineries.
Yeah. It's definitely. We have
one bad announcement. The
one bad
San Antonio Art and Crafts Festival has been canceled.
CNN?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. For October 28th?
Yes.
Sand
and Artisans Festival has been canceled.
Okay. I write that down.
Yeah, we were talking about it. We were promoting it for the last couple of weeks, and we just got a notice that they are going to be canceling it.
Cancel. Okay.
That is
Well, I will.
From Saturday is our Pet Fest, so that's coming up.
Yeah. Yes, October 7th, and I just put the tweet out on that. So let me see if I can run this real quick, and if I can find it. There it is. We'll be back in about a minute, so stay tuned and listen to this about the 2017 Pasco Pet Fest. Okay, hold on. Thank you.
Join us October 7th. From 11 a.m. to 3 p.m. at Florida Estates Winery for the 5th Annual Pasco Pet Fest. Enjoy wine tasting, music, food, vendors, and more. Looking for an adoptable pet? Many rescue groups will be represented at this pet-friendly event. Participate in a raffle for a chance to win prizes. Proceeds from the event will be donated to Florida Skunk Rescue Incorporated, a nonprofit animal organization. We'll see you Saturday, October 7th, from 11 a.m. to 3 p.m. for Pasco Pet Fest at Florida Estates Winery, located at 25241 State Road 52 in Land O'Lakes, Florida. For more information, visit www.pascopetfest.com.
All right, there you have it. So
very good.
We'll see everybody out there a week from Saturday, October 7th. Plan to be there. It's going to be a huge event. Unfortunately, I can't do events like that, especially when there's pets available for adoption, because I end up, well, I'd have a zoo out here, but so I can't do that. But I'd be like, I want that one. I want that one. I want that one.
And that.
Yep. Rent a SUV just for that. And I would love to do it, though, because it's a great cause. So, you know, come on out and support the vendors, and especially for the charitable organizations that are going to be there. And, of course, wine tasting and all that that good stuff at the winery, which is always good. So
always fun.
Do that. But, yeah. What else? Let's see. I guess that's all I have.
That's all. I don't have anything else either. So.
All right.
Are we going to thank Michael and Kevin for their time.
Yeah, absolutely. That was really enjoyable. And having them both on at the same time, I was like, wow. I'm looking at the switchboard going, oh, okay, this is working.
That was fun.
Thank you, Blog.
And they just talked, and that was great. Yeah, so
that was good. Next week, I don't know if you can. I don't know what kind of preparations you have for the Saturday, we'll see if we can.
Program's still on. I'm going to be talking about canning wines and a portable can company that goes around and actually puts wine in cans for you, so you don't have to have a special bottling system. The can ban and how they pop wine into cans and take care of interesting. Way they do it and all that. So that we'll talk about that next week and some other things as we always do.
Awesome. All right, then it is planned. We will see you all next Thursday, October the 5th. October the 5th. All right. We'll see everybody. Yeah, already. And thanks everybody for tuning in, and have a great week. And it's always a good time to drink wine. So or. Vino.
Always a good
Vino
thing.
Brew.
Vino beer and wine.
Yes. All right. Thanks again. We'll see y'all.
Thanks for listening.
7 p.m. next week. Thank you.
This concludes tonight's broadcast of All About Wine on Blog Talk Radio with your host, Ron, originating from Florida Estates Winery in Land O'Lakes, Florida. Florida Estates Winery is located at 25241 State Road 52 in Land O'Lakes, Florida, 4 miles west of Interstate 75 or east of US 19 and US 41. For more information on Florida Estates Winery, visit the website at floridaestateswines.com or call 813-996-2113. That's 813-996-2113. The winery is open daily, 11 a.m. to 6 p.m. For show information, links to All About Wine on Twitter and Facebook, or to be a guest on this show, visit the show website at www.allaboutwinebtr.com. Archive shows are available for download on iTunes or on our show page at blogtalkradio.com www.allaboutwine.com/allaboutwine. Thank you for listening. Drink responsibly, and we'll see you next time on All About Wine.